things, quoting two words of a song called Cold. I snatched up my phone, engaged it, touched the screen until I got to where I was going. Unblock this caller. Shit, shit, damn, damn, shit, shit. He survived the surgery, but I'm sorry, Ms. Dare. He sustained significant head trauma during the accident. We've induced a coma until the swelling in his brain goes down, and then we'll have to see. However, it's my sad duty to inform you that you should prepare. With the trauma he sustained, it's my opinion that the young man you knew very well might not be the young man who wakes up. I switched off my phone. It emitted its weird electronic click, and I threw it with a clatter on the island. I walked out of the room, but I did not throw away those flowers. It was the next Saturday, which was, like it always was, the day after Friday. It had been a home game for the Glossop Raiders, a home game I did not take Andy to. Also, a home game I did not walk out of with Hicks at my side. I had not unblocked him. I had also not received more flowers. And he had not been sitting in the audience that night, or the night before, as I sang wearing a dress he'd seen on my laptop and had approved of with a look on his face that made me wish I'd had it right then so I could model it for him. They had not found the drifter that killed Faith's husband, and things had settled in to the point that no one was even talking about that, or Hope and Hickson anymore. Now, Hickson and I were still a topic of conversation after I sang that song to him at the Dew, after which, for days, that was all anyone had to ask me about, except Lou, who just kept rolling her eyes at me, and I hadn't even told her about the flowers. I'd just arrived home from singing. It was late. I was tired. I loved my house, but I was wishing for the first time since I got over Keith that I wasn't coming home to it with it being dark and empty. And I was wondering, for the 7 millionth time, if I should not only unblock Hicks, but do it and text him that the flowers were beautiful, and I had a hankering for chicken tenders from the Harlequin. I let myself into my kitchen, automatically moving toward my island to throw my purse and keys there before I would go back to switch on the light and lock the door, when someone grabbed me from behind. My entire body went chill as I opened my mouth and screamed. A hand clamped over it, and then I was forced forward, fast and hard. The hand left my mouth and became a fist caught agonizingly in the back of my hair, right before my face slammed into the edge of the counter of the island. I grunted at the impact and blinked, shaking my head, feeling my limbs loosen as my brain struggled to stay conscious and that fist in my hair pulled me up. I felt the arm fixed around my middle, and I heard a man say in my ear, "I just wanted to listen to you sing." I cried out as down I went, my face slamming full frontal into the top of the island this time. I felt and heard a terrifying crunch, and I was yanked back up. "That's all I wanted," he ground into my ear. "I just wanted to listen to you sing, to tell you I like how you sing, to get close to the lips that make that sound. And who are you? Who are you to act like you mean something? Who are you but an aging lounge singer in a club in the middle of nowhere, acting like a diva, acting like you matter?" He started to take me down again, but I twisted at the same time I brought my foot up and aimed as best I could. I stomped it down. I was wearing high-heeled sandals, and it seemed my heel caught his toe because he made a high-pitched noise and his arm at my middle loosened. I yanked viciously free of that hold, but he still had his fingers in my hair, so I was reeled back when I tried to dash away. I whirled around, my neck bent to alleviate the pain of his hand still in my hair. But my eyes found him. I clenched a fist, aiming up. I planted it with everything I could muster in his throat. He made a foul, gurgling noise, and his fingers slipped out of my hair. I was terrified out of my mind, acting on instinct that was a drive, its sole purpose being to incapacitate him. And I got close. I put my hands to his shadowy shoulders, seeing it was the creepy guy from the Dewdrop. I lifted a knee with all my might and slammed it between his legs. He emitted a tortured moan of agony and coasted down to his knees, falling to the side, and I vaguely heard a thunk that might have been his head hitting the leg of my island. But just then, I realized I still had my keys in my hand. So I took off. I bleeped the locks on my car as I flew across the kitchen to the door he'd left open and turned my ankle in my damned heels when my feet connected with the concrete of my driveway. I didn't go down, and I didn't waste time closing the door behind me. I kept right on sprinting, so I hit the door of my car with too much momentum, and the rest of my body collided with it. I just pulled back, my hand slipped off the handle once. I caught it the next time, got it open, hauled myself in, closed the door, hit the locks, and then fumbled around, turning on the car and putting it in reverse, actually hearing the tires squeal in the drive as I backed out. My head was bouncing around on my neck as I cut the wheel at the end of my driveway. I threw my Cherokee in drive and tore down the street, heading straight to the sheriff's department. But my stomach sank when I caught sight of it and saw the lights on at the front, but nothing else. No one beyond those big windows. And it came to me this was Glossop, not Denver. The police stations didn't stay open all night. They didn't need to, when only one man got dead, not of natural causes, or by his or her own hand in over 50 years. "God!" I shouted, swinging into the side parking lot and coming to a jolting halt, when I slammed on the brakes, staring at the lineup of 5 Ram trucks, looking parked precisely and ready for action but with no one around to activate them. I looked stupidly down to my passenger seat, then my lap, and realized I might have kept my keys but not my purse, which held my phone. But I'd left a creepy creep in my house.
I've heard more about him than is healthy for anyone outside Brad Pitt.
Lou's words came to me, and they came with the fact that not only did I know Hickson had moved to those not-so-great, not-exactly-the-projects apartments on the west side of town, something everyone knew, he was also the sheriff. Not to mention the man who'd put in his bid to look after me. On these thoughts, I reversed out, put my foot down, and drove like the woman possessed by fear and adrenaline that I was. I entered the apartment complex and saw his Bronco right away. So I parked with the hood of my car butted up against a small stand of trees next to it, got out, ran behind my car, the Bronco, some silver car, and to the side stairs that surely had to lead to Hickson, since his car was parked to the side, not to the front like some other cars were. I clambered up the stairs, not getting far before I slipped on one, and went down to my hands and knees, this digging my keys into my palms so hard I cried out at the pain, and dropped them through the slatted stairs. I was pulling myself up when a light from above me came on. I threw my head back and watched the door at the top of the stairs open slowly. Then it was thrown open. The storm was thrown open, and Hickson was standing at the top of the stairs, wearing nothing but a pair of simple light blue pajama bottoms, his hair a sleepy mess. He looked down on me for not even a second before, for some reason, he bellowed, "Shaw!" and came down the stairs in great leaps, taking them 3 at a time. I had one hand up on his railing, mostly hanging from it, knees to the slats. But then I wasn't hanging from it, and my knees weren't on anything at all. I was hauled up with his hands under my arms, and then I was flying. My legs went careening, and finally I was caught snug in a hold at his chest as he ran, yes, ran up the steps, taking them 2 at a time.
"Dad?"
I heard as Hicks prowled into the dark room.
"Lights on, get the ice pack, and get dressed,"
Hicks ordered.
"Holy shit, what happened?"
the other male voice in the room asked just as a light went on, and Hicks carefully set me down in an armchair. I saw a pull-out bed open, covers mussed, and a cramped room. Then I saw nothing but Hicks's face.
"What happened, baby?"
he asked. That creep..."
"Greta, pull your shit together."
"Hicks, that creepy guy from the Dew attacked me while I was coming into my kitchen tonight." I reached out, grabbed his neck on both sides, and pushed out. "He's in my house. I got away, but I left him in my house."
"Dad, what's going on?"
a girl's voice asked. Hicks lifted away, and then I saw nothing, because I had the cold of an ice pack in a dish towel held to my face.
"Get dressed,"
Hicks ordered.
I felt fingers wrap around my wrist and lift my hand to hold the ice pack, all the while Hicks kept issuing commands.
Girls, get dressed. Shaw, take her to the hospital. Have them check her out. The girls go with you.
Dad, where are you going?
A younger girl's voice asked. I pulled the ice pack away to see Hicks disappearing down the hall and his two daughters standing to the side of it. Heads turned, watching him go. Then I saw his son bent toward me.
Greta.
He was gently lifting my hand, then he disappeared behind the biggest ice pack in history.
Keep that on, long's you can, okay?
Okay. I mumbled behind the pack.
Hurry, Cor, Mamie, fast, get dressed.
Shaw took up the bossing. For my part, I started shaking. Like, a lot. But I jumped when I heard Hicks roar,
Corinne!
My hand not holding the ice pack was taken up in a firm, warm grip.
Greta, sweetheart, you hold it together.
Hicks started bossing me.
I'm here, Daddy.
I heard.
Corinne, come here. Sit with her. Talk to her while your brother and sister get dressed. She's going into shock. Make her talk. Keep her with you.
Where are you going?
She asked.
Sorry.
He said, like it wasn't to his girl.
Greta was slipping into shock. That's an affirmative, Hal. She's 322 Rosewater. Get there, now.
Then, definitely to his girl and not a guy named Hal.
I'll meet you at the hospital. I got my phone, honey. You call me you need anything, okay?
Okay, Dad.
Take care of her.
Okay.
His hand left me. Another hand took mine. And then I felt Hicks kiss the top of my head.
Get this sorted, sweetheart. Promise.
He murmured to my hair. And then I felt his presence leave. There was silence before I heard a hesitant, shy,
hi, I'm Corinne.
I burst into hysterical laughter, leaning forward with the overpowering pull of it. What pulled me out was feeling her hand squeeze mine again and again, her other hand behind the back of my neck, doing the same, and her calling,
Hey, 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 Greta, hey, hey, hey.
I sat up abruptly, her hand at my neck falling away. Ice pack still held to my face. I sucked in a breath and said,
I'm here. I'm a little freaked out right now, darling.
I held her hand tight and shook it.
But I'm here.
I'll take over now, Cor. Go finish getting dressed.
Shaw ordered. My hand was exchanged and I had Shaw.
Good job holding that ice pack to your face,
he encouraged. I wanted to burst into hysterical laughter again, but instead, I held his hand in a vice grip in an effort to hold it together.
Okay, well, remind me not to arm wrestle you.
He quipped. I released my grip some.
I just need to, get over having my face slammed into my kitchen island, twice, and then it'll be all good.
I shared, stupidly.
Fucking fucker,
he hissed. Okay, apple doesn't fall far from the tree. So noted.
Shaw, Dad's gonna be mad you dropped the F-bomb twice and in front of a lady.
The younger girl's voice declared in deep horror. If I wasn't in pain, freaked out, and skimming the edge of hysteria, it would strike me as not a good thing I was meeting Hickson's children this way. Instead, before that thought could catch hold, Corinne came out calling,
I'm dressed, I'm good, let's get her to the hospital.
Shaw's hand got firm in mine in preparation to pull me up as he suggested,
You might want to lower the ice pack to get down the stairs.
I lowered it then, and looked into his dad's eyes in Shaw's own version of a handsome face, murmuring,
Good call.
But his face was tight as it took in mine. I didn't take that as a good sign. Hickson's kids helped me out. Corinne locked the apartment, and they put me in the passenger seat of the silver car, the girls in the back, Shaw in the driver's seat, doing the manly man arm behind the passenger seat thing when he reversed out of the spot. He had a girlfriend. She probably thought that move was amazing, since it kind of was. Shaw drove swiftly but carefully to the hospital. And it wouldn't be until the nurse's eyes grew huge when they walked me through the doors of the emergency room at McCook County Hospital, that I would realize I was bleeding profusely from the nose. It was all down my chest, the front of my dress. with drips and smears on the awesome, lightweight champagne gold swing coat I always wore over my cocktail dresses when it was nippy in the spring and fall. Well, anyone catch any good movies last summer? I asked in a nasally voice because my nostrils were packed with gauze, sitting on the end of an exam bed in the emergency room with a nose I could actually feel swelling since it was goddamned broken. Hicks's kids were standing around me as we waited for Hicks, who had called Shaw and told him we were not to move until he came to get us. Shaw grinned at me. Mamie noted while staring at the big bandage of gauze and tape that covered my nose. It's good they don't have big nose casts. That wouldn't be too fun. I hope when I grow up, I still look pretty even after someone broke my nose. Corinne muttered, like she wished she didn't have to, but the laws that made me pretty enough for that to withstand having a broken nose forced her to do so. Still, it was sweet. I thought this until Shaw growled out, "No one is ever gonna break your nose, Cor." She cut a glare to her brother.
"I'm just saying, in the unlikely event I get one, I hope I get through it looking pretty."
"In the unlikely event you get one, you'll have other things on your mind, like hoping your dad and brother don't get jail time for handing the man who did it his ass."
Oh, boy. Mamie looked to me. Corinne looked to me. "I'm quite certain your father will not hand the man who did this to me his ass, seeing as he's the sheriff and all," I assured.
"I wouldn't bet on it," Shaw muttered.
"Shaw?" Corinne cried. "Dad can't go to jail? Daddy's going to jail?"
Mamie asked, confused. I opened my mouth to reassure her, but her father's deep voice came, doing it for me, and my eyes shot up to see him round the curtain to my bay.
"I'm not going to jail, baby. It's all cool."
She ran to him, throwing her arms around his middle, and his long body jolted slightly as he slid his arm around her shoulders. But his eyes were locked to me.
"Did you get him?"
Shaw asked.
"Hal and Larry are processing him,"
Hicks answered his son, his focus still on me. But at his words, my shoulders slumped in relief, my head dropped, and I looked to my knees.
"Good,"
Shaw muttered.
"Just a second, baby,"
I heard Hicks say gently, and then I felt an equally gentle fist under my chin, tipping my head back, and I saw Hicks disengaged from his girl bent in front of me.
"What we got?"
And yep, that was also gentle and sweet.
"Broken nose, no concussion,"
Shaw answered for me authoritatively. I was okay with that, but it was not good he carried on.
"Other than slamming her face in the kitchen island twice, he didn't hurt her."
I watched from close, and I'll admit I did it with a fascination that was mildly grim and not as mildly titillated, as Hickson's eyes ignited with wrath. "She can speak for herself, Shaw," Corinne pointed out. Before his son could answer, Hickson took his fist from my chin, straightened, and ordered,
"Time to go home."
Oh, no. No, no, no. I wasn't going home. A man attacked me in my kitchen. Until I burned some sage, drank a ton of gin, and had about 400 hours of therapy, I was never going back there. "Can I use your phone to call Lou?" I asked Hickson. He looked down at me. But it was Corinne who asked, "Why would you call Miss Lou at this hour?" My eyes slid to her. I mumbled, partly because I was confused she had to ask that question, and partly because I was getting a little panicky, because I always just hit Lou's contact in my phone, and I didn't have her number memorized. "You're just gonna freak her out," Corinne informed me. "Well," I started.
"Cor,"
Hickson growled. "Well, she is," Corinne told her dad, then returned her attention to me. "You can call her tomorrow." "I kinda don't want to go home tonight, darling," I explained softly. She looked at me like I'd lost my mind.
"Well, of course not. You're staying with us."
As my mouth fell open, her attention shifted to her brother and she asked, "Can I drive home?"
"No."
Both Shaw and Hicks answered at the same time.
"Dad,"
she turned to her father,
"I need to learn night driving."
"Not at 4 in the morning,"
he replied.
and you got a learner's permit, honey. But Shaw is still a minor, and you need an official adult in the car with you.
She threw up her hands in an unexpected teenage girl fit. The only kind there probably was. I didn't know. I hadn't had any teenage years, even when I was in my teenage years. I'm never gonna learn night driving.
Cor, we've hit October. Soon it's gonna be night more than day, every day.
Shaw pointed out. She was screwing up for a retort, but Hicks had experience with this, which he demonstrated immediately. He did this by ordering by way of request.
Can you two discuss this in the car so we can all get home?
Mamie moved to her father and grabbed his hand. I watched as his fingers automatically curled around and held tight. And if blue roses and him leaping downstairs didn't mean I was totally unblocking him, and I was, seeing that did.
Can I ride with you, Dad?
She asked.
Sure,
he answered.
Is Greta riding with us?
She asked. Hicks looked at me.
Yes,
he answered. Cool, she said, turning to me and grinning.
And guess what?
She said to me.
What, sweetie?
I asked.
It's not real nice you got your nose broke tonight, but now you got a killer Halloween costume,
she declared, her gaze dipping down to the front of my dress before it came back to my face. I stared at Hicks's little girl, who had blue eyes and dark hair, and his frame, and didn't look a thing like Hope, but looked like he'd created her himself from sheer will, flying in the face of the laws of nature. She was gorgeous. Once I'd taken her in, I burst out laughing, but this time, it wasn't due to hysteria. Chapter 16 Junk Sunday, Greta. My eyes opened the next morning, and at first I was disoriented. Then the grogginess I felt, the pain in my face, aches down my neck and back, and the warmth cocooning me reminded me where I was. I was in Hickson's bed, in Hickson's apartment. I could feel he was no longer with me, however he had been. This astounding event occurred after we'd arrived back at his place from the hospital, and it was astounding because his children had maneuvered it. It went like this. We walked in, and Hicks started issuing orders, these being,
Right, girls, back to bed. Greta's on the pullout. Shaw, I'm bunking on the floor in your room. Get your sleeping bag.
To which Corinne declared, Greta can't sleep on the pullout. It isn't even cool you're sleeping on the pullout, but she has to rest. And it'll be uncomfortable for her to be in our living room. I know I wouldn't be able to get to sleep in someone's living room if I was thinking any second someone would have to get up and go to the bathroom, being noisy or going to the kitchen to get a drink of water, especially if I barely knew those people.
Right, so Greta's in Shaw's bed and...
Hicks started to amend, only to be interrupted by Corinne again, this time more forcefully.
Ew, Dad!
She squealed. Shaw's room smells like boy. No one should have to sleep in there without an oxygen mask. Even Shaw. She needs to sleep in your bed. Mamie and me'll sleep on the pullout.
Fine.
Hicks bit out and turned to Shaw.
You know where the sleeping bag is?
It was Mamie who put her 2 cents in that time, calling out,
Dad.
Then stating like he was a dim bulb. We're not like three. I mean, isn't she your girlfriend? Everyone stared at her in astonishment, even Hicks and me.
What?
She asked, looking around.
All the kids at school said you're seeing the pretty lady that works with Miss Lou at the salon.
Her eyes stopped on me.
And you're Greta, the pretty lady who works with Miss Lou.
Again, she glanced around.
Am I missing something?
Shaw made a noise that sounded like he was swallowing laughter, but Corinne stated commandingly and a little snootily,
No, Mame, you aren't missing anything.
Even with this information confirmed, Mamie wasn't done speaking. However, she was only beginning to work herself up, doing this, planting both her hands on her slim, not so little girl anymore, but still a little girl hips, and screwing up her face.
Boyfriends and girlfriends sleep together, Dad, like moms and dads sleep together. We're not babies, we know that. Like, you think that we think when we're not around, you guys don't sleep together? Sheesh.
She didn't expect an answer to what she clearly thought was a stupid question that didn't deserve one. She threw out an exasperated hand in my direction and kept right on going. And she got her nose broke by some bad guy. It's kind of like me. If I got my nose broke by some bad guy, I'd want you to be close. She doesn't want you on the floor in Shaw's room. That's closer than wherever her kitchen is. But it isn't close enough. I mean, she ran right to you, Dad. Didn't wipe her nose or anything, just came right to you.
She's right, Dad.
Shaw put in smoothly, then demonstrated he was either a young man with a one-track mind, that wasn't the usual track, or he was a son who knew his father very well, and therefore how to manipulate him, for he used this opportunity to remind his dad,
she got her face slammed in a kitchen island twice, and then got so shaky we had to hold her hand. You should be with her.
Hicks opened his mouth. I was a little embarrassed about the truth of the fact that I did indeed get so shaky they'd had to hold my hand. But I opened my mouth too. But Corinne got hers in first.
Great, that's settled. Come on, Mame.
She reached a hand out to her little sister. Let's go change the sheets real quick so Dad and Greta can get in there and we can all go to sleep. Mamie moved to Corinne and they walked down the hall hand in hand.
I'll get you some water, Greta, Shaw declared, so you can take that pain pill they gave you at the hospital.
I watched him go to the kitchen. Hicks watched him go, too. Then Hicks and I looked to each other.
Don't worry about it, sweetheart. I'll talk with them after we get you settled. Make sure they're good with this.
He assured me quietly. All right. I agreed. He came to me, wrapped his hand around the back of my head, bent in and kissed the top of mine before he pulled back.
Go on back with the girls. Ask Corinne to get you one of my teas. Settle in. Yeah?
He said. I nodded. Shaw returned with a glass of water and dug the small envelope with two pain pills in it out of his back jeans pocket that they'd given me at the hospital. That, incidentally, he'd slipped out of my fingers the second they'd done that. Clearly feeling in my state, I couldn't be trusted with the important task of looking after a tiny envelope. I took the water and envelope with a smile at Hicks's son, sent that smile Hicks's way, marveled for a moment as I looked between the two of them that they could look so alike and so different at the same time. Then I went back to Hicks's bedroom. It was like the living room, crammed with furniture too big for a room of that size, and I saw the girls were finishing up with the flat sheet. I took the pill, set the glass aside, slipped off my jacket, and draped it over a bunch of other clothes on a club chair in the corner, and helped them finish up. Corinne got me a tea, and they left after saying goodnight, closing the door behind them. I changed, got in Hicks's bed, liked it precisely as much as I thought I would, which was to say immensely. He had very comfy mattresses, turned out the lights and settled in. Eyes open, staring into the dark, not thinking about some creepy creep who attacked me. Thinking about how Hicks held my hand against my thigh the whole way back from the hospital. At first, Mamie had chattered a lot. When it became clear she'd talked herself to sleep, Hicks had squeezed my hand and said in a soft voice,
"Got there. Your neighbor was there with his pistol. So was Hal. Your neighbor said he heard you scream and it woke him up. When you heard the squeal of your tires, he was looking out his window, saw you peel out down the road and caught a good look at your face. He'd already called 911, but when he saw that, he grabbed his gun and headed out. Hal had already gotten a call. By the time I got there, Hal was there. Said he arrived, your neighbor was in the driveway training his pistol on the guy. Neighbor reported he caught the guy stumbling out of your kitchen door and detained him. Hal took over then.
Which neighbor? I asked.
Man named Ned Cheever.
I was totally baking Ned some cookies.
Who you are to me, I gotta stay removed, Hicks shared. Called Larry to work with Hal. EMT came to look over the guy. He got his head conked and good. Was holding himself delicate, but he was cleared for processing. So they took him to the department.
Holding himself delicate. I couldn't stop my smirk. Hicks must have caught it because he squeezed my hand and asked,
"How'd you get away?"
Punched him in the throat and then kneed him in the...
I didn't finish that because Mimi was probably asleep, but just in case she wasn't.
Good girl.
Hicks murmured on another hand squeeze.
Asked. They said they took pictures at the hospital.
Yeah, I mumbled. And they did. Both of me bloodied before they cleaned me up and taped and the blood wiped away. I knew those photos would be useful in case that creepy creep did something stupid and tried to fight the charges I was oh so totally going to file. But I hoped I never saw them.
We have him on breaking and entering, criminal trespass, criminal stalking, and assault. State of you, witness hearing you scream and fleeing the scene, catching the guy coming out of your house. None of that will go good for him, sweetheart.
Hicks informed me. I didn't want to say what I said next, but I had to say it because Hicks was sheriff. So I said it. Well, you need to know that I'd just come in. I didn't have a chance to lock the door. I'd closed it, so he entered, but he didn't do any breaking.
Can't enter any property. Intent to do the occupant harm in any way. Door is locked or not, baby.
He replied gently, not ticked in the slightest, even after he'd repeatedly told me to keep my doors locked, and that was the first thing I'd do from then on for sure. He'd also told me to keep my phone out, something else I didn't do, and was totally doing from that point on. Saying that as it went down, it wouldn't have mattered.
Even so, all the charges might not stick if he makes a deal.
Hicks continued.
And Hal told me first thing the asshole did when Hal showed was ask for his attorney. Not sure we got enough on him to pin criminal stalking either, but we're gonna charge him with it.
Okay, I whispered.
That said, Greta, it's known from his attendance at the Dew, he knew your schedule, and it was clear he either followed you or was lying in wait.
He told me.
This was premeditated. That's a very bad thing. He's dumb enough with all we got on this to fight it. Deals will come off the table and he'll be screwed.
That sounded better. So my next, okay, was a lot stronger. After it, Hicks's hand gave mine another squeeze. He'd nabbed my purse when he was at my house, and Mimi had woken up close to Glossop, so when we arrived at Hicks's, she offered to carry it up for me, like my broken nose was two broken arms. However, I had the feeling she offered because she felt left out in the variety of duties there'd been to look out for me, and it was something she could do. I was learning Hicks's kids were good kids. Thoughtful. Sweet. Not surprising. Hope being their mother notwithstanding. Up we went, with Mimi carrying my purse, Hicks holding my hand, and then his kids maneuvered me into his bed. The pill was working, and I was nearly asleep when I felt the bed move as Hicks got in it, and I felt his warmth shift into my back, melding with the curve that was me. Baby, I mumbled just as his hand rounded my waist. It found mine, and he laced his fingers through.
Right here,
he replied. That was it before I fell asleep. Now I was awake. The effects of the pill hadn't quite left me. The pain was dull, but there. And I was in Hicks's apartment with Hicks and his kids there, too, somewhere. I pushed up, looked around, noted the sun was coming through the windows, and from Hicks's bedside clock it was just after 9:30. I'd had under 5 hours of sleep. Whatever. I threw the covers back and looked to the club chair to see my sandals were still on the floor in front of it, but my dress and jacket were gone. Regardless, I couldn't exactly put on a bloody dress. I also couldn't exactly walk out only in Hicks's tea. In fact, I didn't exactly know what the immediate future held for me. Problem was, I also couldn't think on any of this because I had to go to the bathroom. Really. I went to the door, opened it a bit, peered through, heard a TV playing low and some quiet conversation that didn't seem close, but I didn't see anybody. I did see the bathroom door open, so I scooted out, hurried there, and ducked in. I closed the door behind me, did my business, washed my hands, and was carefully pulling the bloody gauze out of my nostrils when a knock came at the door. Tossing the gauze in the toilet, I turned to the door, and when the knock came again, I called,
yeah? You decent?
Corinne called back.
Yeah, darling.
The door opened. She scooted through and closed it behind her. Her gaze glanced off my eyes before she walked past me at my back, closed the lid of the toilet and dumped a stack of folded clothes there. She then passed me again, moved to the doors of the narrow cupboard just in from the closed bathroom door, and did it talking. "Those are mine. You're..." She turned to me and gestured awkwardly with her hands around her hips, then up to her chest. "Like a little bigger than me, but that's some of my loose stuff." Her eyes skimmed through mine again. I saw her cheeks were flushed. It was pretty, and she opened one of the cupboard doors. It was full of stacks of folded towels and washcloths in the odd color combination of the darkest of blues and bright pink. This, I realized, was boys and girls, of which there was an equal number in that household, with the boy part of that probably not real hip on using pink towels, and the girl part of that equally not hip on using the darkest of blue. There was also a shelf of such things as bottles of pain reliever, band-aids, ointments, cold medicine, and other health and first aid supplies. The rest of it was shoved full of girl stuff. Some of it Corinne was collecting. She turned to me with her hands full and didn't quite look at me when she stated, "This is my eye makeup remover. You can use these cotton wipes. And my all-around makeup remover. You can use a washcloth for that if you don't want to get your bandage wet rinsing it off. And my moisturizer, because sometimes my face feels all tight if I don't put on moisturizer after I cleanse. I also have a scrub in there if you're feeling like a deep clean. You can use it if you want. I don't mind. And my comb and my brush and whatever you want." She did this, handing me bottles, tubes, and a sleeve of cotton wipes, all of which I took. "Thanks, sweetheart," I said softly. There was another knock on the door, and neither Corinne nor I said a word before it opened, and Mamie scooted through, squeezing by her sister who was blocking her entry as she closed the door and grinned at me.
"Hey, Miss Greta."
I grinned back.
"Hey, Mamie."
Her nose scrunched.
"Does that hurt?"
I didn't have to ask what she was talking about. I'd seen myself in the mirror, and an elbow to the eye might buy you a shiner that took days to come up dark, but a broken nose shadowed the skin under both eyes deep purple the day after. My raccoon eyes, from not taking my makeup off last night, didn't help matters much.
"It isn't that bad," I told her.
"Cool," she replied, then asked, "What kind of donuts do you like?"
Dad's getting them.
She shared and looked to Corinne.
"Says we're going with him."
"Okay," Corinne agreed. Mamie turned back to me.
"I like chocolate-covered raised and chocolate-covered cake with sprinkles and cinnamon twists.
I like glazed yeast," Corinne informed me, "and cinnamon swirls." They both stared at me. Apparently, my immediate future included donuts with the Drake family.
"I like, well, donuts," I told them.
Mamie smiled big. Corinne's lips twitched. Then I jumped as Mamie shouted, doing it putting her hand to the wall, her other one out to her side, and rounded, executing a graceful plié.
"Miss Greta likes anything."
She did another plié as we heard Hicks shout back,
"Great, let's go."
"We should go,"
Mamie told me, but did it doing another plié. Corinne turned to the cupboard and pulled out one of the approximately 17 new toothbrushes in their packages that was stacked in a pile on the first aid shelf and handed it to me. I juggled the bottles and tubes to take it, noting, "It's good you all take care of your teeth." I did this, remembering how hard Hickson had kissed me after I gave him a toothbrush, and wondering if this was a Drake family thing.
"Mom's weird about body stuff,"
Mamie shared with me, and I felt awkwardness coming from Corinne at the mention of their mother, none coming from Mamie, but I still felt that awkwardness also start coming from me in sympathy with Corinne's.
"Says we gotta take care of them, even our teeth. Daddy and Mom aren't together anymore, but she still gets on him a lot if we don't eat peas and brush day and night and floss and blah blah blah."
Another plié.
"And Dad's a dad, so he's not like..."
She faked a low voice that had me not quite suppressing a giggle.
"Do whatever, kids.
I mean, we have junk Sundays, which today is, thankfully, but he'd make us eat peas even if Mom wasn't big on things like that. Fortunately, we like peas."
"Girls,"
Hickson shouted. We should go, Corinne stated instantly.
Yeah,
Mimi replied on another plié.
Thanks for all this stuff, darling, I said to Corinne, lifting my hands filled with stuff.
And the clothes.
Not a problem, she returned, closed the cupboard and shot out of the room, again closing the door behind her.
Mimi did another plié, then declared,
Don't worry, Dad'll like you even with your face like that. Corinne took a header going for the volleyball last year during a game. Bam! Face plant on the basketball court. It was all swollen and bruised, I mean like for days. And Daddy was all snuggly and kissy like he didn't notice at all.
Yep. So totally unblocking Hickson Drake.
Good to know, I murmured, grinning at her.
Mamie!
Hicks yelled.
I better go,
she said swiftly, executing another plié before she shot me a grin, turned and took off, also closing the door behind her. I looked to the mirror, only to have another knock come at the door. I turned again that way.
Yeah?
It opened, and only Hickson's head came in. My stomach flipped.
Hey, baby, gonna get donuts. Girls take care of you, you good?
I nodded.
Yeah.
He smiled and said,
Good. Make yourself at home. Shaw'll look after you. You need anything while we're gone.
I nodded. He kept smiling as he murmured,
Be back.
Okay, Hicks. He gave me a top-to-toe look I couldn't decipher, but it left my toes curling into the fluffy rug he had in front of the sink. Before he caught my eyes, his went soft, or softer, then he disappeared behind the closed door. I sighed. Then I carefully cleaned off my makeup, brushed my teeth, moisturized, and put on Corinne's clothes. I returned her stuff to the cupboard and walked out the door. I went back to Hicks's room, dumped the tea on the clothes-covered chair, struggled my bra on under the shirt without fully taking it off, and went to the bed. I made it and walked back out in a pair of Corinne's loose-fitting light gray yoga pants and an equally loose-fitting pale pink cowl yoga top that had a long hem that came down over my hips and openings at the cuffs that hooked over my thumbs. The pants fit a little snug at my butt, but the whole outfit was cute. I came out and found Shaw lounged on the couch. He knifed up the second he saw me.
Hey,
he greeted, looking at me closely.
Morning, Shaw.
How you doing?
He asked. In need of coffee, but otherwise good. He started moving in the direction of the kitchen.
I'll get you some.
You just show me where things are, I replied, following him. I can make it.
I got it.
He returned, and I halted at the edge of the counter, which abruptly stopped and opened to the small dining area that had a handsome table in it, but one I could see had leaves. Just in that small space, they couldn't be in it. Seeing that, I glanced into the living room, with its huge, slouchy, impossible-to-be-anything-but-comfortable-looking couch that had already had the pullout pushed back in, and matching armchair, a big denim-covered beanbag that hadn't been there the night before, all of it not fitting that space. All of it was also such I had no idea how they actually got it up those stairs and in that door. And taking that in, the weight of Hicks's need to get his kids out of there, and the sadness of Hicks's need to restart his life after Hope ended the one they'd led, bore down on me.
How do you take it?
Shaw asked, and I looked to him, happy to have my mind turned. Little creamer.
Gotcha.
He went to the fridge and opened it, offering,
You need to charge your phone. We got every charger known to man, so just let me know what kind you need and I'll set you up.
Okay. He sloshed in creamer, stirred my coffee, tossed the dripping spoon on the counter while I bit my lip at that act and came to hand it to me. I took it. He asked,
You need aspirin or Tylenol or anything?
You're sweet. And yeah, actually, whatever you got.
Okay, go get you some.
He muttered, rounding me. I took a sip of my coffee, turned, saw my purse on the table, and went to it. I sipped again and opened the clutch, pulling out my phone. I looked to the screen, and outside some Facebook notices, there was nothing. And I found it weird I was attacked in my kitchen last night,
and this morning there was nothing. Then again, it wasn't yet 10 o'clock. Maybe news hadn't made the rounds. But I should call Lou and share things with her before she heard anything from anyone else. Shaw returned with some pills, 2 white ones. Didn't tell him 4 would be better. I didn't want to concern him. I juggled phone and mug. He dropped them in my upturned hand, and I expressed my gratitude before I said, I should probably call Lou. If she hears before I tell her, she might not like that much. He nodded.
I get that. But just to say, I heard Dad talking to Hal last night, and he said he wanted a lid on this. A lot of stuff got round about that Calloway thing, and he knows his deputies talk to their husbands, wives, girlfriends, whatever. It's inevitable, but he wasn't a big fan of it.
I could guess that since he hadn't shared even a single detail with me.
It's mostly Hal who can be a douche, Shaw informed me, but it can sometimes be Larry. He's a good guy, but that Calloway thing was big, and he was like, I don't know, I guess frustrated they haven't nailed him yet. Anyway, they had to ask for the public's help because they have to find him. I mean, everyone knows the guy was insane just shooting somebody, but he's like a drifter, and they have to find him before he drifts away for, like, ever.
Yeah, I said softly.
Dad wasn't mean about Hal and Larry.
Shaw assured me quickly.
He didn't bitch, I mean, complain, or anything. I can just tell when he gets quiet and into his head, and his mouth gets tight when folks ask him about stuff they're not supposed to know. But he gets that this situation is, you know, extreme.
It's definitely extreme, honey, I whispered. He nodded.
Well, you should call Lou, and I need to call Wendy. She was coming over to hang with us today, but Dad asked me if I could ask her if she wouldn't, so, you know, you could be comfortable after what happened, and since you're getting to know us all at the same time.
You don't have to do that, I told him. I can go to Lou's or something.
Shaw grinned big. No way Dad'll let that happen. He didn't say anything, but I can tell he's super miffed some guy slammed your face into your kitchen island. But he's still real happy you're here and getting a chance to know all the Drakes. And anyway, Greta, he said I can go for a few hours over to Wendy's this afternoon, so it's all cool.
He's still real happy you're here and getting a chance to get to know all the Drakes. God, sweet. Just as long as you're not disappointed, you don't get to spend a day with your girl, I replied.
No, totally. It's all cool.
It was then I grinned at him. He grinned back and muttered,
Gonna go call Wendy. Be back.
And with that, he rounded the corner beyond the kitchen and disappeared. I threw back the pills, then walked my phone and mug around the dining room table to stand at the big window that faced out to Hicks's stairs, to stand in the sun while I called Lou. I took a sip of coffee, noting that it was good the owners of the apartment complex planted those trees, because now that they were tall enough, they kinda hid how ugly the units were. But I froze while doing that when I saw my Cherokee was now parked next to the silver car. While I stared at it, it hit me that Sheriff Drake must have deduced I'd dropped my keys where I'd fallen on the stairs. He found them, and he moved my car from its place butting the trees and parked crazily to the space closer to his apartment. It was just a few feet closer, but it was closer. It probably didn't need to be moved, but he'd moved it. And this told me that Hicks and Drake wanted the people he cared about to have the premier parking spots, such as they were, but still. He also wanted comfortable furniture his kids could lounge on, even in a cramped, not very attractive apartment. Good mattresses for his daughters to sleep on, washcloths in colors they liked, fluffy rugs in front of the bathroom sink. His life had imploded, and it had taken his kids right along with it. But he bought fluffy rugs for them to stand on when they brushed their teeth, and pink towels for his girls, stocked his first aid shelf with anything they might need, and let his daughter shove all her girl stuff in the remaining space. I knew something about living the life you thought you'd be living for the rest of it, the life you wanted to be living, having that end, and having to start from scratch, and I'd only had Andy to look after, not 3 growing kids. I thought about Corinne finding out about us, Hicks learning his son was done with his mother, knowing he had to find a way to do the right thing about their deteriorating relationship, even not having the desire to do that. These at the same time investigating a murder. All this happening
while needing to build something stable for his children and rebuild his own life, with the additional complication of meeting a woman he connected with in a way that couldn't be ignored, but had to have been confusing. None of this made Hicks treating me the way he did okay. But being in that apartment, seeing my car where it was, standing by a nice dining room table that Hicks probably couldn't afford, but he bought because he likely didn't want to spend a lot of money getting a place that cost a fortune that he thought he wouldn't be staying in long, but his kids would have to be there however long it took, and he was going to make it as nice as possible. And knowing all the rest, it made me understand why he lost it. I dropped my head to the phone, called Lou, and put it to my ear.
"Yo, girlfriend," she answered. "What's up?"
"I need to tell you something, and say first I'm okay, totally okay. So when I tell you, I don't want you to freak out." "Oh, shit," she muttered. I decided just to lay it out and brace for any fallout. So I launched right in, telling her about the night before, doing it with my eyes to my car, and forgetting the fact she was a mother, a business owner, and Bill's wife. So even if the news was extreme, she wasn't a freaking out kind of chick. Thus, when I was done talking, all she did was ask, "Oh God, babe, are you okay?" "Yeah. I've learned a broken nose feels a lot worse than a black eye, but I just took some pills and I'll be all right. Do you need me to cancel your clients tomorrow?" I shook my head, regardless she couldn't see it. "No, I think I'll be okay to go in. I have to go to the hospital in the afternoon to have the dressing changed, but I'll call those clients and switch them around."
"And you say Hickson got the guy?"
"Yeah, they caught him."
"Good,"
she murmured, then,
"And you're there? With him? And his kids?"
It was casual, the way she asked it, but I could tell it was a forced casual. She was worried. Hicks wasn't in her good graces, but she knew now was not the time to lecture me. That didn't mean she didn't want to know where I was at.
"He leaped down the stairs,"
I whispered, glancing to the corner where Shaw had disappeared.
"What?"
"He heard me fall on his stairs when I was trying to get to him. He opened the door, took one look at me, and Lou, he leaped down the stairs to get to me, in his pajamas and bare feet."
"Yowza," she breathed. She was right. That had been a yowza.
"The kids have been great," I said quietly. "Shaw is like his dad, a lot like him. Very protective, very sweet. Mamie's cute and funny. Corinne is, well, I think she's struggling. She seems awkward sometimes, maybe hiding confusion behind being snippy sometimes, and sometimes shy, but mostly underneath it all, she's being sweet too."
"Well, not the way most would pick to meet the kids of the new man in your life, but at least you had something to focus on rather than sitting at dinner and making small talk," she remarked.
I laughed softly. "I guess you could look at it like that."
"And he's your new man, isn't he? This is the universe's dramatic way to make that so," she noted, now sounding forced noncommittal.
She so wanted to lecture me. "He leaped down the stairs, Lou," I reminded her.
"Yeah, Hicks and Drake leaped downstairs in pajamas and bare feet to get to me, I'd get over him taking out some serious life frustrations on me by being a huge dick, too."
I let out a breath. No, she wasn't going to lecture me. At least not now.
"You want me and the girls to go get Andy?" she offered.
And I grew still.
"Take him out and do something with him today?"
Oh my God, I hadn't thought of Andy. I never missed our Sundays, not since we'd moved to Nebraska. And before that, Keith and I never missed them except for me once when I'd had the flu. But back then, I'd had Keith, and so did Andy, so he'd gone to see him. Not to mention, we'd only taken 2 vacations without Andy the whole time we were married. We might do long weekends, so we weren't away from him for too long. But if we took time off and did it going out of town, we usually took Andy with us.
"I can't. He can't see me like this, Lou."
I pointed out the obvious. "I know, babe. So me and the girls will go out there, get him, take him somewhere and have loads of fun. And it won't be the same as a visit from his big sis, but he won't feel like he's missing out too much."
"I can't ask you to.
Girlfriend, Bill went out and tied one on last night. He's still sleeping. I've asked him 200 times to fix the leaky faucet in our bathroom and 50 times to drag out the fall decorations, and I know today will not be the day either of those will get done. If he wakes up when I'm here, the first thing I'm gonna do is punch him in the sternum. And Andy's the bomb. The girls will love it. Much more than their mother punching their father in the sternum. That's probably true. It's totally true. She returned. So call Andy, tell him to expect us in an hour or so. And don't worry, we'll take good care of him. She said this last while I watched the Bronco swing into the non-spot of grass next to my Cherokee, but Hickson did it without running into the tree. I'll call Andy, I replied, and I'll send you an over-the-phone hug for being so awesome. I spoke while watching Hickson climb out, the girls climb out, but it was Hicks who took the two bakery boxes from Corinne after he rounded the back of the Bronco. Apparently, people he cared about didn't even carry donuts. Also, apparently they didn't want for donuts. Two boxes? Our pleasure, Greta. I'll text you later to let you know we got there, and after that to let you know it's all good.
I love you, Lou,
I whispered, moving quickly to round the dining room table to put my coffee mug to the kitchen counter because the wood of the table was too nice to rest a hot mug of liquid on. Love you, too. Get some rest. Charm the pants off those kids, but don't worry about that. Just be you, and that'll do it. Shut up, I ordered before she made me start to cry. You shut up. Whatever. Later, babe. Later, Greta. We hung up as I turned the corner and saw Shaw coming out of his room. I had to get back to Hickson's room because I had to talk to Andy, and I didn't want to do it with an audience or with noise in the background that might confuse my brother. Hey, I said quickly to Shaw. Your dad and the girls are back, and I have to call my brother. I usually visit him on Sundays, and I can't today because, well, I lifted a hand and pointed to my face. It might freak him out.
Visit him?
Shaw asked. In my haste to get to Hicks's bedroom, it hadn't occurred to me that Shaw didn't know about Andy. I gotta call him, was all I had time to say. I'll explain after, okay? He nodded. I scooted by him as the door opened and Mamie called, We're here with donuts! I kept going, head to my phone, as I found Sunnydown's number in my contact list. I hit it as I closed the door to Hickson's room behind me. And I did this, wishing that Andy didn't lose and misplace cell phones all the time, doing this causing him to feel like crap he wasted money, and sometimes get angry or upset, meaning we'd come to the decision he shouldn't have one. And I had to call Sunny down and go through that rigmarole to talk to my brother. I went to the bed and sat on the end of it as I asked to speak to Andy. The noises were muted behind the door, thankfully, when he came on.
Hey, Tata.
Hey, buddy, listen. I went right into it. I have good news and bad news. The good news is Lou and the girls are going to be there in around an hour to take you out for a day of fun. The bad news is that I'm not feeling really good, so I can't come too.
Not feeling good?
He asked. No, darling, I'm so sorry. You know Sundays are the best days of the week because I get to spend them with you, but I just can't today. But I'll be there Thursday like always, and I'll call every night like always too. And maybe by Thursday, the swelling and bruising will have gone down, so I didn't look so scary. And I'd be able to come up with a story that wouldn't freak Andy out.
Okay, Tata, then it's football time.
I stared at the carpet of the floor in front of me at his words, but lifted my head when I heard the bedroom door open. Hicks walked in, his eyes to me, and I saw from a lot closer what I'd seen from the window in his dining area, that Sundays were faded jeans, boots, and cream thermals that fit tight at his chest and biceps days. However, I couldn't appreciate that like I would normally do. Yeah, buddy, it's football time, I said to my brother quietly. Hicks closed the door behind him, while Andy replied,
Can we go to a game?
These were the times I had to tread cautiously. Either he wanted to go to another one, or he forgot he'd already been to one. If it was the second, and I reminded him, he might get frustrated, and that could be bad, especially with Lou and the girls heading out to see him. A Glossop Raiders game? I asked the floor, where I had again aimed my eyes.
Yeah, that'd be cool,
he exclaimed. He'd forgotten. My head dropped, so now I was looking at my lap. Hicks sat beside me on the bed.
I'll have to talk to Gemini, I told him. I work Fridays, Andy.
And I'd already asked for a weekend off. Gemini would arrange another one for me if I explained, or if I didn't. He knew Andy had these problems, but I couldn't do it frequently. There was an act coming in, but that was weeks away, and it might not be during a home game.
Yeah, I know, Andy said.
And, well, he'll have to let me take a Friday off. Hickson's hand took mine, and then he did something strange. Strange and tender and fascinating and wonderful and amazing. He rested the back of my hand on my thigh, put the heel of his palm to mine, and stroked the insides of my fingers with his fingertips in a sweet, soothing way. I liked every way he touched me physically, and it might make me crazy, but I liked that way the best.
Yeah, I know, Andy repeated.
Staring at Hicks touching my fingers, I replied, I'll talk to him, darling, and we'll see.
Okay, Tata. Gemini'll say yes. He always says yes, and it'll be great. We can ask Lou to come and the girls, too.
Yeah, I agreed, because I knew it was great because it already had been. I also made a mental note to text Lou and tell her to tell the girls not to mention the game.
Feel better, he said, so you can come on Thursday.
I will for sure, buddy. Have fun with Lou and the girls, yeah?
For sure, Tata. Bye.
Bye, baby bro. He hung up. I dropped the phone to my other thigh and stared at Hicks in my hands. Topper. He had beautiful hands.
What was that?
Hicks asked. I looked up at him to see him staring down at me. Andy wants to go to a Raiders game. He nodded.
Okay.
He's been to a Raiders game. It came more cautious this time.
Okay.
He forgot he's been. I whispered.
Shit.
He whispered back, and he stopped touching my hand so he could wrap his arm around me and pull me into his side. I liked the hand touch, but being tucked close to his warm, strong body didn't stink. I dropped my head on his shoulder. Should be used to it when he forgets, I muttered. I just sometimes... Last night and everything, it took me by surprise.
Yeah.
At least he didn't get upset that I couldn't come today. Sundays are our days.
Sundays.
He murmured strangely, like he'd just figured something out. Yeah, Sundays. I confirmed because I didn't know what else to say.
At least it's good he didn't get upset.
He kept murmuring. I'm not sure what I'm going to tell him when he sees my nose this way.
We'll come up with something.
I nodded, my head moving on his shoulder.
Greta?
He called. Yeah? I answered.
Baby, you're sitting next to me on the edge of my bed, head on my shoulder, wearing my daughter's clothes. And I know last night that shit was extreme, but...
I knew where he was going with this, so I interrupted him. On a soft, almost not there, I'm unblocking you, Hickson. I felt his body go rigid, the pads of his fingers digging into my flesh at my hip, before he relaxed and murmured a deeper than normal,
good.
I liked that deeper than normal and what it meant. I liked it a whole lot. He cleared his throat and asked,
are you good hanging with us for Junk Sunday?
I tipped my head back with it still on his shoulder, and he dipped his chin and twisted his neck in a way that had to be uncomfortable, but he still did it in order to look in my eyes. What are Junk Sundays? I asked.
They start with the TV on and donuts, sweetheart, and healthy living-wise, it goes south from there.
Okay. Here it was. All right, this was it. It was time to make it official. It was time to complicate things. That sounds awesome, I whispered. Something came up from deep in his eyes. It was warm. It was beautiful. Then he dipped in and touched his mouth to mine. He pulled away a breath and said,
"One bad part. Hal's coming over soon to take your statement. Once we get that done, you just get to relax and eat and hang with me and my kids. No pressure. No one to impress."
Hicks, I think I need to impress your kids.
Then just be you.
Okay. Crap, that was unbelievably sweet. I pushed through that before I ignored my broken nose and his kids down the hall and let what he said and the thermal he was wearing overwhelm me. And I jumped him. Is Corinne okay with, well, having this show up on her doorstep in the middle of the night causing a huge drama? I asked. He turned his head, but did it to tip it so he could rest it against the top of mine. Also sweet. Before he replied,
"My daughter isn't stupid, and she loves her dad. I think the situation is coming clearer to her. Helps that Shaw's being how Shaw's being, and Mamie too. Can't say in the last few weeks that she's come around. She's been chilly, but she's a good girl. She knows better than not to be at least polite. Saying that, she'll get where she needs to be."
I don't want to make her uncomfortable. He gave me a squeeze.
"Baby, she gave you her clothes. It was her idea. I grabbed your dress and coat because I didn't want you to see them when you woke up, in case they brought up bad shit for you. And when I said I had your keys and would stop by your place on the way to get donuts to get you something, she said you could wear something of hers. I don't know for certain, being a guy, but my take for a teenage girl, letting someone borrow her stuff is a big thing, so she's already getting there."
His arm gave me another squeeze.
"So don't worry."
So that was where my dress and jacket had gone. And as mentioned, I'd never really been a teenage girl. I'd been a teen mother to a kid I didn't get to have the fun of making beforehand. I still knew letting someone borrow their clothes was a big thing. So maybe he was right.
"Babe,"
he called when I fell silent. "Yeah," I replied.
"Greta,"
he said, and raised his head when I pulled mine from his shoulder to look in his eyes. "Right here, Hicks." He lifted his other hand and curved it around the side of my neck.
"Sweetheart, you okay?"
"About spending the day with your kids?" I asked. He blinked kind of slow and answered,
"No."
"About Andy?"
"No, baby."
"Oh, boy. About us?" I asked hesitantly. His fingers slid down so his thumb could stroke the side of my neck, and he noted gently,
"Greta, sweetheart, you were attacked last night."
"Oh, right. What did I say? I was attacked." I went to him, and he leaped down the stairs to get to me, and then sprang into action, catching the guy. Well, he didn't, but he went out to do that, getting me to the hospital. He didn't do that either, but he arranged it. Him and his kids looking after me, bringing me donuts.
"Greta?"
he prompted, again gentle. "You leaped down the stairs to get to me," I whispered. His brows drew together.
"What?"
I was not okay when it happened, I shared.
"All right,"
he said slowly when I spoke no more. "But then I came here and..." I pressed my lips together, then unpressed them. "You made it all okay."
"Fuck,"
he growled. "What?" I asked. He stared at